Hey, Bar Brawlers, Daniel J. Rowe here. Just going to mention that we have an Indiegogo campaign on right now. You can contribute and help make the Bar Brawl Journal Volume 1 a reality. Just go to Indiegogo, search Bar Brawl, and contribute as much as you want. The first 60 or so can receive special prizes.
We'll put the link up on the site, too.
So we'll put a link up on the site. Now here's the Bar Brawl.
From Montreal, Quebec, this is the Bard Brawl.
Welcome, Bard Brawlers, to the Bard Brawl. My name is Daniel J. Rowe. I am the host of the Bard Brawl for today, and my co-host is Mr. Eric Jean.
Surprise.
We have come to the end of the great popular multiple film, theater, performance art, mime renditions, Prince Pericles of Tyre.
Yeah.
And that means we get to go through some of the speeches.
Yes.
On today, the speeches podcast. Hooray!
Woo! Pirates.
There's not as big of a crowd for the speeches podcast as some of the other podcasts have.
Really, we're alone on a cold, late autumn day.
I gave blood today.
Oh, I did not.
Yeah. I interviewed a guy last week that had given blood 100 times. And you'll notice by my lapel that I gave blood for the third time. I don't feel like I deserve this.
My mother gives blood every 2 to 3 weeks.
Really?
Without fail, yeah.
Wow. She must be in the hundreds.
She's, yeah, easily. Oof. They even call her. Are you coming out this week? 9 to 5?
Yeah. It's my work sponsored it, so I was sort of obliged. This is the Bar Brawl going pound for pound with Shakespeare, one line at a time, much like the Montreal Canadiens farm team is doing to get on their injury-ridden team. Many of you probably, I would guess, haven't heard some of the speeches from Pericles or even know anything about Pericles.
Well, except for all of you, because all of you have listened diligently to all 5 episodes of Pericles.
Found on barbrawl.com. Yes, you have, and it was very exciting, I'm sure, for you, as it was for us, going through Pericles, which not many people have heard or seen, but now you, listener, have heard or seen. So that makes you better than those people.
You get to impress your other so-called Shakespeare experts who have not read Pericles with your knowledge.
And guess what? We're going to give you a little bit more. Mm. We'll give you these monologues, and you can memorize them and then record them and send us a copy of them to show how much better you are than...
than we are.
We are. So, it's a fun play. Eric doesn't like it very much. Barbara, listeners... Eric doesn't like it very much.
I do like it.
It's fun.
It's fun.
It's goofy. I wouldn't, and there's pirates.
I wouldn't put it up there with like Julius Caesar or King Lear as my favorites, but it's fun to read. It's fun to do together. If I was reading it alone at home, I might not enjoy it as much.
Yeah. You high school teachers out there, I would recommend doing this with your class. It's very fun. And you get to explain how the incestuous king and daughter relationship
That's
works.
That's not going to be an awkward conversation to have with a group of 15-year-olds.
Speaking of incest, Eric Jean, what is the first speech we'll be listening to?
The first speech is, it's introduced by the daughter of Antiochus, but it's basically Pericles reading out this riddle that Antiochus, for some reason... decided he was going to make a declaration of his incestuous relationship with his daughter, but hide it in a really not very clever riddle.
Act 1, Scene 1. Incest away!
Of all said yet, mayest thou prove prosperous. Of all said yet, I wish thee happiness.
Like a bold champion, I assume the lists, nor ask advice of any other thought, but faithfulness and courage.
He reads the riddle.
I am no viper, yet I feed on mother's flesh which did me breed. I sought a husband in which labor I found that kindness in a father. He's father, son, and husband mild, I mother, wife, and yet his child, how they may be, and yet in two, as you will live, resolve it you.
Gross.
Side.
Ooh, sharp physic is the last, but oh, you powers, that gives heaven countless eyes to view man's acts, why cloud they not their sights perpetually, if this be true, which makes me pale to read it?
Side to the princess.
Fair glass of light, I loved you, and could still, were not this glorious cast it stored with ill. But I must tell you, now my thoughts revolt, for he's no man on whom perfections wait, that knowing sin within will touch the gate. You are a fair vial, and your sense the strings, who, fingered to make man his lawful music, would draw heaven down, and all the gods to hearken, but being played upon before your time, hell only danceth at so harsh a chime. Good sooth, I care not for you.
Prince Pericles, touch not upon thy life, for that's an article within our laws, dangerous as the rest. Your time's expired. Either expound now or receive your sentence.
Okay, that's a weird riddles in Shakespeare. Eric Jean, your thoughts?
Clues. Always clues. But, like, when we did Merchant of Venice, you'll remember that in Act 3, the scene with through several of the acts, actually, the casket scene. It's finally Ray Fiennes' time to choose.
Joseph Fiennes'
time to choose. I know.
Bassiano?
Yes. Bassanio.
Bassanio, yeah.
When it's Bassanio's turn to pick, Portia sort of sings, she asks the musicians to spontaneously sing a riddle that's filled with clues about which box to pick.
This is kind of a weird riddle because no riddles come up late. The play turns into a bit of a riddle.
Yeah.
In a sense. But this scene, this whole idea is sort of almost gone by the second act. It changes quite dramatically.
I mean, this is just the this is the event that sends Pericles wandering, basically. It's the thing that makes him go, like, he thought his life was figured out. He was going to go here. He was going to marry this girl. And that was it. And then when that didn't happen, he suddenly made an enemy. And he had to leave home. And then that led to everything else in the play.
It led to chivalry. Act 2. Where is our next speech come? Where does our next speech come from? I was going to try and do it in the passive using where is our next speech
to coming? Be found?
To be found. Oh, there it is.
There it is.
Wow. Well done.
It's Act 2, Scene 2, I believe. And Pericles has washed up on shore. He doesn't really know where. He finds out there's a bunch of fishermen tell him that he is in the kingdom that is ruled by Simonides, who is a good king, as opposed to Antiochus, who's a bad, very bad king. So, luckily for him, his armor washes ashore, so he's able to go to travel to the main city, Pentapolis, and join the sort of jousting tournament that Simonides has set up. And as the mysterious knight, he vanquishes everyone and manages to win the heart of the lovely Thaisa.
So he actually wins the heart of two princesses in two acts. But one princess has a bit of baggage. By the way, how good is Amrit Sanger as the king?
Very good.
The incestuous king. Yeah.
I just find it funny that Pericles blames her for the relation. I mean, I would probably be put off too if my dad put my, incestuous relationship in display, but he blames her for this relationship, and you're like, she's probably 14.
Right? Yeah.
Anyways.
I'm assuming it wasn't as consensual, but what happens to Helicanus and daughter? Is it Helicanus?
No, Antiochus, Antiochus and daughter. They get struck down by lightning, as is only fitting.
In one of Gower's epilogues. Okay, well, let's listen to Act 2, Scene 2.
By Juno, this is Queen of Marriage, all viands that I eat do seem unsavory, wishing him my meat.
To Simonides. Yeah.
Too much.
Sure, he's a gallant
gentleman. To Thaisa.
He's but a country gentleman. Has done no more than other knights have done. Has broken a staff or so let it pass.
Aside.
To me, he seemed like diamond to glass.
Aside.
No. Yon king's to me like to my father's picture, which tells me in that glory once he was, had princes sit like stars about his throne, and he the sun for them to reverence, none that beheld him, but like lesser lights did veil their crowns to his supremacy, where now his sun's like a glowworm in the night, the which hath fire in darkness, none in light, whereby I see that time's the king of men, he's both their parent, and he is their grave, and gives them what he will, not what they crave.
What, are you merry knights?
What they will, but not what they crave. Jay Reed, as Pericles.
I apologize to the brawlers. It's Act 2, Scene 3.
Yeah.
I've led you astray.
All of those flipping through their complete works. Where is it? Stupid onion skin paper. It doesn't turn. How much does the... Sorry, this is the sort of... courtly love, knight, romance, sort of Don Quixote. How much does that play into this play, or does it?
It kind of does, but this speech is actually about how much Pericles admires Thaisa's father. Right? He talks about how much...
Daddy issues!
No, but... about how much Simonides reminds him of his own father, and how he's the very model of a good king, and as a result, would be willing to marry his daughter.
Mm.
Like, you know, having a good dad, father-in-law is sort of more important than having a good wife to him.
Somewhat appreciate that.
That's true. I have an excellent father-in-law.
So do I. I do have friends that don't appreciate their father-in-law quite as much. But the Don Quixote thing, what I find, I mentioned this a bunch of times, is the Pericles going from series of unlikely events.
Well, that's actually the romance, like, theme. If you read medieval romances, which this is sort of based on, they work the same way. There doesn't need to be a reason why someone washes up in Kingdom A, B, and C. They're taken by the currents, and that's where they go. So that's why, like... Part of the problem that I have with Pericles is because I'm taking my 21st century idea of plot development, and I'm looking at this, and it's jarring with what I'm expecting. But for Shakespeare's audience, this would have been totally fine. It'd be like, we don't need to know. He got on a ship. He got shipwrecked. He landed in Kingdom Number 2.
Yeah.
It's all good.
I find suspending that disbelief a little bit satisfying, especially when I watch historical... movies, historical fiction that are just so... It's not non-fiction. It's sort of an interpretation, and you don't have... It gives you a lot less stress if you wonder how things happen.
Mm.
Sometimes I yell out, it's a TV show. That's just how TV shows work.
Yeah, I'm sure that the people watching the show with you appreciate the commentary.
Moving right along, everybody loves people commenting on TV while being watched. Are we still with Pericles? I think this is the sea swashbuckling sea ship.
Well, this is the storm.
Storm. Yes. Oh,
Pericles is caught in a storm. His wife is in labor, and of course the storm is complicating things considerably.
And last podcast, I said that it was Saul that was being sent to Tarsus and then switched and went to Nineveh, but that was Jonah.
Yes.
Saul was on the road to Damascus. And it's good.
Yeah.
But he did go to...
He got knocked off his ass.
But Paul... the Apostle Paul went to a lot of the places that are in this play, and there's a lot of similar themes.
You know, it's funny, because I was thinking about Pericles, and I was thinking about Job.
Because
at the end of the play, not to ruin it for those who haven't been following along, but he sort of gets reunited with his daughter and his wife, and they sort of inherit a kingdom out of it, and everything ends up. But that's why after his, like, 20 years or 15 years of suffering, He gets rewarded for his good behavior, I guess.
It is a good king. It is a very biblical. I found the parallels to biblical parable really.
It's Gower's fault.
Works pretty well. At Gower, who we'll hear from later.
Yeah.
Act 3, Scene 1. Pericles. I believe we're still with J. Reed.
Yep.
Hello, too.
Enter Pericles, a shipboard.
Now, God of this great vast, rebuke these surges, which wash both heaven and hell, and thou that hast upon the wind's command bind them in brass, having called them from the deep. Oh, still, thy deafening, dreadful thunders gently quench thy nimble, sulphurous flashes. Oh, how Lycorida, how does my queen, thou stormest venomously, wilt thou spit all thyself? The seaman's whistle is as a whisper in the ears of death, unheard. Lycorida, Lucina, oh, divinest patroness and midwife gentle, to those that cry by night, convey thy deity aboard our dancing boat. Make swift the pangs of my queen's travails.
Enter Lycorida with an infant.
Now, Lycorida!
Here is a thing too young for such a place, who, if it had conceit, would die, as I am like to do. Take in your arms this piece of your dead queen.
So for those of you expecting newborn babies, like our good friends David Wheaton and Laura McDonald, yes. Bard Brawlers, mm-hmm. I would recommend not using Lycorida's line there when you're handing the baby to the father.
Yes, what was it again? Take in your arms this piece of your dead queen.
Yeah. First off, the queen is not dead.
Yes.
So it's technically incorrect. Second, it's a little insensitive.
Just a little.
Yeah. You shouldn't probably call your baby a piece of anything. It's just a baby. It's not a piece of your wife. Take in your arms this piece of your living wife. There's another similar, the prodigal son or daughter, whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could make a... Go ahead, write a paper, everybody, and post it on bardbrawl.com.
We may read it.
I'll read it. Yeah. I read everything.
I'll give you a grade, too, if you want. This paper is B+. It has problems with the structure, but overall the argument is convincing.
You mentioned Merchant of Venice. For all of you who are aching to listen to it, and you should because it's awesome, you can do so at barbrawl.com/play/Merchant of Venice. But just follow the tabs. And moving on from the sea, we move to the wizard Saruman the White.
Saruman the Alchemist or whatever.
Saruman the White. This is an interesting speech. Why is it interesting, Eric?
Because Saruman is sort of given the power. He's basically described as having power over life and death. So Thaisa washes up ashore in a sort of coffin that they put her in. And they assume that she's dead. But he is like, oh no, she's only mostly dead. And then sort of uses his science, art, magic. It's all sort of jumbled up together to revive her and bring her back to life. And he doesn't keep any of her jewels or whatever. They're sort of kept so she can prove her identity later. He just does it out of the kindness of his heart.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. He's got a reputation for healing people for free.
Yeah, he's like the Tempest. What's the guy's name?
Prospero?
Prospero. Mm. He's also a little bit wizardy.
Yeah, although Prospero's kind of looking to regain the title of Duke of...
Different, but not really. He also talks virtue be cunning. Mm. This is a theme throughout the play. Am I wrong? Gower always talking about...
Yeah. I mean, Gower wrote the Confessio Amantis, which was like a big, long poem that was a sort of morality tale for rulers. Don't trust flatterers is the short version of it. And this play is filled with rulers who pretend to be one thing and are another. So Antiochus, Cleon, and Dionysa pretend to be sort of friends. And then they're opposite models. So there are Simonides, the advisor to Pericles.
Helicanus.
Helicanus, who's another model of an excellent sort of retainer. So there are complete opposite models of good and bad rulers.
And Pericles has to surf through them.
Surf, like the Silver Surfer.
Like a fork through noodles. Mm. Act 3, Scene 2.
I hold that ever virtue and cunning were endowments greater than nobleness and riches. Careless airs may the two latter darken and expend, but immortality attends the former, making a man a god. 'Tis known I ever have studied physic, through which secret art, by turning o'er authorities, I have, together with my practice, made familiar to me and my aid the blessed infusions that dwells in vegetatives, in metals and stones, and can speak of the disturbances that nature works, and of her cures, which doth give me a more content in course of true delight than to be thirsty after tottering honour, or tie my pleasure up in silken bags to please the fool and death.
Your honour has through Ephesus poured forth your charity, and hundreds call themselves your creatures, who by you have been restored, and not your knowledge, your personal pain, and even your purse still open, hath built Lord Saruman such strong renown as time shall ne'er decay.
Writer, director, / actor, J. Reed, ladies and gentlemen. He really took this play by the horns, eh?
Yeah.
Really went with it.
But he normally goes with it. Whatever role he inherits, he...
He goes in hard. Mm. Pericles, first gentleman. One of the fun things about this play is that there's lots of... You can explore the studio space, as it were, and discover what's the different voice of a sailor, a pirate, and a gentleman.
A fisherman.
Fisherman. Oh, Lord. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Prostitute.
Body gentleman. Lascivious gentleman.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good lines in this one. With that being said, I've hinted long enough. Shall we delve into the realm of the pirate?
Mm.
Oh, and Jay pulls a lady's voice. If you listen very closely, you'll be able to tell which one is her. We're in Act 4, Scene 1. And this is Marina, the virtuous Marina, who gets sold to a whorehouse, but turns everybody into Christians and virtuous people because they can't bear to sleep with her because
One who really wants to sleep with her, who's the governor of the town, ends up respecting her wishes and adopting her into her household. And then when he finds out that Pericles is her dad, he asks for permission and they get married. And then Pericles inherits that kingdom too.
Good. Just like in real life. Act 4, Scene 1. J. Reed, ladies and gentlemen.
My commission is not to reason of the dead, but do it.
You will not do it for all the world, I hope. You are all well-favored, and your looks foreshadow. You have a gentle heart, I saw you lately. When you caught hurt in parting to the thought, good sooth, it showeth well in you. Do so now. Your lady seeks my life. Come you between and save poor me, the weaker.
I am sworn and will dispatch.
Enter pirates.
Eric, you want first?
Hold, villain.
Leonine runs away. A prize, a prize.
Half part meets half part. Come, let's have her aboard suddenly.
Exit Marina, dragged out by the pirates. And then enter Leonine.
These roguing thieves serve the great pirate Valdes, and they have seized Marina. Let her go! There's no hope she will return. I'll swear she's dead and thrown into the sea, but I'll see further. Perhaps they will but please themselves upon her, not carry her aboard. If she remain, whom they have ravished must by me be slain.
Now, the misread there, I said reason, not the dead. That's reason, not the deed. My job is not to reason the deed. Mistake. Okay. Part of Barbara charm.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara lures to read all plays cold. And so we make mistakes all the time. Sometimes we ask each other questions and then it answers our own questions.
That happens fairly.
In the next scene. Exit. Exit, drawn off by pirates. Where would you rank that in the pantheon of exits?
It's close to exit pursued by a bear. I mean, pirates outrank bear in my view, but the scene
really?
Is more set up.
All bears?
Most bears, I think.
Well, what bear would be better than a pirate for you?
Pirate bear.
Well, polar bear was better than a pirate.
Yeah.
Panda bear?
No.
Koala bear?
They're not really bears.
Black bear?
Sure. No, you know what? No, but grizzly bear, yes.
Grizzly. Kodiak bear? Kodiak bear is just a big grizzly bear.
Well, then yes.
Yeah. So she gets hauled off by pirates. That was really fun. I liked playing a pirate. Jay was upset. He wanted more pirates.
Yes, I as did we all.
He suggested that I had maybe promised him more pirates, which I could neither confirm nor deny that
I may have promised me more pirates. Like, I may have remembered there being more pirates than there actually were.
Yeah, but any pirate amount is good.
Well, I can't... What other plays are there pirates? Not As You Like It. The Twelfth Night. When we did Twelfth Night, there's no pirates, but you remember that Antonio, the merchant, is wanted for acts of piracy against the state?
Yeah. Because what's interesting is that is the era of pirates. My ancestor is Sir Francis Drake.
I'm my direct descendant. A farmer.
And he, and he was a pirate. And, well, when... They get called privateers, but it was basically like the Sopranos, as one of my teachers explained it. You just send out your hitmen to go steal gold and
you gave them you basically disavowed all knowledge of them but gave them special permission to lay claim to only certain types of ships. So if they were British, they'd attack, let's say, Spanish ships. But then you'd run into problems where a war would end, but by the time they got messages out to the privateers, like, they were still raiding the other country's ships for a year and a half. Whoops, we didn't know.
Sorry, I was just getting more stuff. But of course, none of that stuff was rightfully theirs anyway. They stole it all from the First Nations people of the Americas, which is...
Or people in Africa.
Or people in Africa.
Yeah.
Just stealing people. I thought you meant stealing from people in Africa. No, just stealing... Oh my goodness. History is an ugly, ugly cesspool sometimes when you look at it. And with that, we'll go to the end of the play and the epilogue. This is unique that there's epilogues and prologues in this play.
Yeah. Well, it's not entirely... It's unusual. It's not unique. I mean, other plays have sort of epilogues, like Midsummer Night's Dream has Puck's address. And,
yeah, Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet has a bit of an epilogue, and The Tempest. Just off the top of my head, those four, including this one. But even in the other plays where there are, like, there's like a chorus or something, I mean, Gower doesn't take part in the action at all. And it's like a kind of a strange... thing. And the other thing too is that this one's really like a moral. He's really trying to pass propaganda, which isn't really the case for the other ones.
But Shakespeare didn't write this, so
exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can.
That was a little bit of a joke, but this is one of the plays, right, where there's
a theory generally that Fletcher, he was kind of the. He wasn't quite as skilled as Shakespeare, but he's kind of the guy who became the main playwright of one of them for that period. He it is said that he was kind of a protege and worked with Shakespeare, and that he's part of the plays attributed to him.
Well, you buy that theory. So you will get to put the final bow on this play and the Speeches podcast as you have throughout, because you got the coveted role of Gower, which all of you bar brawlers have heard of.
Enter Gower for one last tour of the battlefield.
In Antiochus and his daughter you have heard of monstrous lust, the due and just reward. In Pericles his queen and daughter seen, although assailed with fortune fierce and keen, virtue preserved from fell destruction's blast, led on by heaven and crowned with joy at last. In Helicanus may you well descry a figure of truth, of faith, and loyalty. In reverend Ceremon there well appears the worth that learned charity wears. For wicked Cleon and his wife, then fame hath spread his cursed deed, the honored name of Pericles to rage the city turn, and him and his they in his palace burn. Nice. The gods for murder seemed so content to punish, although not done but meant. So on your patience evermore attending, new joy wait on you. Here, our play has ending.
Exit.
And can we just get a little shout-out for those stage directions? I mean,
whoever's reading those stage directions is doing a fantastic job.
It's either you really, or I.
We really should find a way to pay the contributor, the people who do these things for us.
Or the people who produce these podcasts every week.
Or who write the blog posts.
There's only one way. Anyway, that wraps up Pericles, Prince of Tyre. It took a long time to get through this, and we do thank the Bard Brawl Nation for listening. Eric went on a honeymoon.
Yeah, sorry.
Apparently, that's an excuse now. I went on a don't want to do anything anymore moon. Sulky fit basically in the corner. No, it's just a moon. It's a bad mood. But we did all five, and that was a lot of fun.
Hey, what's the next play?
The next play... Well, you'll have to come back, Barb Brawlers.
I will throw out this hint.
Ooh.
It isn't a very famous play.
Mm.
So go digging through those musty tomes in the library, the ones that haven't been taken out since 1976.
I'll give you an extra. I'll give you an even one. The letter T begins. And there's more than one obscure play with the letter T. So I figure I'm all right. But then you have to wonder... What is obscurity? Is obscurity the mainstream? These are all things to think about.
The Bard Brawl decides what obscurity is.
Yes, that's true. Bard Brawl. That will be play number 8. We welcome you to come back, and we please, please ask you to kindly go to the Bard Brawl's Indiegogo page and contribute as much as little as you can.
If you can't contribute, you know, and you appreciate the project, then share it. Get it out there for us. We appreciate and love you each and every one.
Okay, that's very true. Thank you to all the readers throughout the 5 acts of Pericles, Prince of Tyre, and to all of the sonneteers, who coincidentally, our first journal will be themed with the sonnets, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
It will be.
I can't leave too many things unseen. Mm. Thank you to Wako for running around and meowing every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Go by our Facebook page and like us. You can follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to this on iTunes. And always, always, always leave a comment on barbell.com. Thank you. And we will come back at you shortly.
See you next time.
See you next time, indeed.
Wherefore with infection should he live, and with his presence grace impiety, that sin by him advantage should achieve and lace itself with his society? Why should false painting imitate his cheek, and steal dead seeing of his living hue? Why should poor beauty indirectly seek roses of shadow, since his rose is true? Why should he live? Now nature bankrupt is, beggared of blood to blush through lively veins, for she hath no exchequer now but his, and, proud of many, lives upon his gains. Oh, him she stores to show what wealth she had in days long since, before these last so bad.